Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And Brother Yasser, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the studio again.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullah wa jalla. Always a pleasure to be with you.
The pleasure is all mine, actually, to have you back in the studio again, helping me criticize movies with religious and spiritual themes. One of those movies that we started, in fact, criticizing from the last episode onwards was Ouija, Origin of Evil, produced in 2016, directed by Mike Flanagan. Well, let's take a listen to a short part of this movie, and then we'll be back to criticize it and continue our program, Viewpoints, the Movie Critique Program, on RIB English Radio. Stay with us.
Let's begin. We invite you into our circle. If that's you, give us a sign.
This is a scam.
We do not attack the clients.
We help people. We give them closure.
You are so weird.
Does she have a lot of problems?
There's nothing too concerning.
What's this?
A Ouija board for work.
Spirit, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Who are you talking to?
What?
Back to the program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser, my guest speakers in this program, helping me criticize the movie Ouija, Origin of Evil, produced in 2016, directed by Mike Flanagan. Let me start with you, Brother Yasser. Is it possible to communicate with spirits or the spirit world using a Ouija board? Can one communicate with the other side at all?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I haven't tried it, so I wouldn't know. But
this is the claim of the movie or movies of this kind,
many
right?
Many claim it. Whether we have actual evidence for it or not, or science or research done on it, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
There are many people who claim they can talk to the spirits.
Yes.
So what I came across is that this is how this Ouija board actually started, was mm-hmm. this communication with lost loved ones.
Yes.
In the 19th century. But can a person communicate with spirits and people from the other dimensions? If you like to say, yes, it is possible. Is it necessary to have a Ouija board? No. We have many examples within many religions, and all religions actually have many examples of certain scholars or these people or religious pious, or even you can say people who are not pious, people who kind of follow a completely unreligious type of lifestyle. But because the world that we live in is based on causality,
mm-hmm.
there is obviously a means, and it is not necessary there is only one way to achieve that particular effect.
Yeah.
There are many ways, for example, to achieve a simple example, heat. Heat can be achieved by fire, heat can be achieved by electricity, heat can be achieved by friction. It's still heat.
Yes.
Right? So therefore, for example, communication with, you know, the realm, again, whether we say it is a different realm from the physical realm is something that needs to be further discussed. Is it a realm within the physical realm and another physical realm within the physical realm? Where, for example, communication can take place, you know, who are you communicating with? Now, all these certain things need to be further research. But to answer your question in a one-word answer, can communication with spirits or beings outside of the human fold be done? Yes, it has been done.
Mm-hmm.
And there are reports of it.
I see. And, in the past, some special people, like particularly talented, I can call them, who were ahead of their time, they could have taken advantage of physical laws, right? Because they knew something that others or the public didn't. So they have experimented something like the magicians, for example, with a sleight of mm-hmm. hand or, running misdirection mm-hmm. in order to deceive the eyes of the people. But using those physical laws, they could have like shown or portrayed something which was spectacular to the people, to the public, exactly. In front of them, mm-hmm. right? The audience, basically.
Yeah. I mean, so a better example is this.
Like Idometer effect, for example, which has been proven or well documented with the Ouija boards mm-hmm. and the planchette, you know.
It could be. Like, for example, just to kind of stress on the point you said, like it doesn't have to be like two brothers, an older brother and a mm-hmm. younger brother. A younger yeah. brother, maybe like 6, 7, mm-hmm. who doesn't know much about the dealings of a car.
Yeah.
But the older brother does. He goes into the bonnet, he just revs the car. Yeah. He says, look, look. You know, because the knowledge and also yeah. knowledge and ma'rifat and that plays a part in it, obviously. So,
yeah, true.
Again, whether the people around are understanding what is happening is another thing that needs to be questioned.
Thank you very much. Let's take a short break by listening to a part of the movie Ouija, Origin of Evil, produced in 2016, directed by Mike Flanagan. And then we'll be back and continue our program Viewpoints on IRIB English Radio. Don't go away.
Daddy. Are you there? Who are you?
Your sister's taking you to school today.
I don't want to go!
I'm gonna stay here and talk to my friends.
What friends?
I'll show you. Are you here?
Back to the program. Viewpoints, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio with me, Mama Jawad, hosting this program, and Syed Abdullah and Brother Yasser, my guest speakers in this program, helping me criticize the movie Ouija, Origin of Evil, directed by Mike Flanagan, produced in 2016. Well, Syed Abdullah, let me ask you about the dangers or the threats posed by the Ouija boards, if there are any, basically. Are Ouija boards dangerous? What are the dangers of communication with the dead or the spirit world? Are there any medical complications, like, for example, the neck pain, as is stated in this movie, or any other mental disorders or illnesses?
Well, when it comes to dangers, there is no, how should I say, there's no registered danger yet. So, like, people have been using it, and there hasn't been any evidence of any danger of such boards whatsoever, because it's became as a commercial thing rather than anything else. Mm. Having said that, sometimes you might have some side effects, though. So, for example, you could have psychological effects where a person might experience fear, anxiety, paranoia, all these kind of things, because he puts it in his mind, and especially if you get in the mood of it and you so psychologically plays yes. Effect on you, so that could be dangerous in a sense. Also, what you mentioned before, the ideometer effect as well, where the person subconsciously he moves it and he thinks he's moving by itself,
yes.
that also can incite and induce fear in the mind of a person. Also, for example, if a person he himself has mental issues, so some people mentally challenge themselves, and then once they start to play with these board games, they start to hallucinate and they start to see things, and then they make it as the this is something is actually happening, you know, and then they try to bring it out to the outside and to the people around them. So it could cause problem in this regard. Also, for example, in terms of mental health, there might be a risk as well, because if you constantly, because you're playing with uncharted territories and where you assume something is going to happen, so psychologically it messes you up. And then again, you have that physical strain that you mentioned, where for example, people feel pain in their necks or in their backs or whatever. Yes. But then again, this is all subconscious rather than actually happening, because the mind has a capacity to create things yes. that don't exist.
I mean, like, apart from Ouija boards, well, do we have any kind of other instruments, like coming from or originating from esoteric knowledge, for example, opening up portals to the other realms of existence?
This has never, it has never been, to say the least. I'm trying to be as scientific as possible yes. here, rather than cultural or supernatural. Yeah. There hasn't been any evidence of opening portals to other worlds. And then, I mean, even when you say a portal, like what you're assuming, there are other realms, realms. We have only one realm. Maybe like I said, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, for example, in this realm, we have the humans and the jinn, and each have their own separate worlds, mm-hmm. which they exist. So a matter of just, like you say, a portal to transport you to another part of this world, yes, mm-hmm. but to another realm where there's evil, like pure evil, and then you let them through. This is just, in my opinion, just science fiction rather mm-hmm. than a reality.
I see. Thank you very much. Let's take a short break by listening to a part of the movie Ouija, Origin of Evil, produced in 2016, directed by Mike Flanagan, and then we'll be back and continue our program, Viewpoints, on RIB English Radio. Don't go away.
Something is happening that we can't understand.
I'm concerned about your girl.
What's this about, Father?
What are you doing? I'm not doing it.
The spirit world is dangerous.
They were watching us all those years.
By using the board, you've opened up a portal.
Back to the program, Viewpoints, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and my guest speaker, Syed Abdullah and Brother Yasser, helping me criticize the movie Ouija, Origin of Evil, produced in 2016, directed by Mike Flanagan. Brother Yasser, we don't have much time to the end of this episode. Let me ask you a quick question. Why do most people, I mean psychics, use kids as a medium? As you can see, even it's been portrayed in this movie, or the movie of this kind, you know, like the father, for example, talking with a kid in the movie, and it looks like, for example, the demon has, you know, more capacity to possess, you know, individuals of younger age.
Maybe the simple answer, if anything like this is even possible, is that obviously a child is not yet developed to a stage where it can defend itself, mm-hmm. Maybe physically or spiritually.
Right.
Again, as Sayyid rightly said, this may just be against science fiction. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not always the case that, you know, a child, just because it's a child, it's weak.
Yes.
It is not necessarily the case. You know, sometimes you have children who are far stronger spiritually than an adult,
yes,
maybe, right?
True indeed, yeah.
But why, again, this may be the case like this, maybe it's easier because it's maybe they want to show this essence of innocence, of purity, that a mm-hmm. child is more pure, a child is more innocent, that therefore it's easier to kind of, which then has a negative meaning to it as well, that if you're more innocent and more pure, it's easy for evil to get to you. This
yes.
is not the meaning that mm-hmm. should be portrayed. It's actually, should be the other way around,
mm-hmm.
that because you're an adult, you have done, you know, all, if possible, you have done worse things in your life than this particular child. You become, you know, polluted with sin or whatever else you've done. It should actually be easier for your soul to be taken over by evil than someone who's pure and innocent.
Mm-hmm.
So again, the message here may be negatively interpreted,
mm-hmm.
but maybe this is why they do it. Again, it's all science fiction or just, you know, fantasy and so on and so
forth. I see. Thank you very much, Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah, for your nice contribution to the program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio, in which we try to criticize the movie Ouija, Origin of Evil, produced in 2016, directed by Mike Flanagan. Of course, hopefully we are going to finish the critique of this movie in the upcoming episode. Thank you very much for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Want to hear something cool?
Sure.
Do you know what it feels like to be strangled to death? First, you feel the pressure in your throat. And you start to taste something very sour in your mouth. Then, it's like someone lights a match right in the middle of your chest. And that fire grows. It fills your lungs and your throat and all the way behind your eyes. And the last thing you feel, it's cold. Good night, Romeo.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Trump Media and Technology Group stock is tumbling again after the company announced a potentially massive new influx of shares. The struggling company is rapidly losing money. We take a look at the US media's coverage of this story. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. After a short-lived honeymoon, former President Donald Trump's media company is experiencing a rough reception on Wall Street. Trump Media and Technology Group, TMTG, which trades under the ticker DJT, his initials, tumbled 18.4% in Monday trading, a drop that follows last week's 21% plunge. The sharp drop in value comes after Trump Media, whose primary asset is Truth Social, the social media platform, on Monday, 15th of April, filed a document with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission that opens the door for the future potential sale of millions of shares. The document, called an S-1, relates to warrants held by investors that can be transformed into shares of stock, as well as shares held by company insiders. The filing also includes all the shares held by the former president. Donald Trump, however, remains under a lockup deal that largely restricts him from selling his shares for another roughly 5 months. His son, Donald Trump Jr., who is a director on the board of the company, and the chief executive officer, Devin Nunes, are also bound by the lockup. The stock plunge has erased billions of dollars from Trump's stake, at least on paper. The shares soared when they began trading on 26th of March, giving Donald Trump's 57% ownership position a value of $6.25 billion. But after DJT's recent slump, that stake is now worth $2.1 billion, representing a paper loss of $4.15 billion. Overall, shareholders have lost $7.2 billion in value since the stock touched a high of $79.38 on 26th of March. The shares tumbled $5.98, or 18.4% of their value, to $26.61 on Monday, 15th of April. When companies issue additional shares, they take on risk of their stock price coming under downward pressure. That's due in part to simple laws of supply and demand. With more stock available, a company's share price tends to fall unless there is a commensurate increase in demand. So far, the former president's supporters comprise a significant part of the company's investor base, with Trump Media chief executive officer Devin Nunes praising their support on Fox Business earlier this month. On Truth Social platform, some investors said they believed the stock would recover, while others said they were taking advantage of the stock's plunge to buy more shares. Bought more today, just like a lot of you, one member of the Truth Social group dedicated to DJT shares wrote on Monday, 15th of April, "I believe time is our friend. Half a year until election, I can definitely hold until then at the minimum." Other supporters on Truth Social noted that the Monday filing doesn't necessarily mean that Donald Trump plans to sell any of his 57% ownership stake in Trump Media. "Trump has not signaled intentions to sell his shares," wrote Chad Nedohin, a pastor and musician on Truth Social on Monday. "There is no new unexpected issuance of new shares. The increase in total shares in the S-1 is for the warrants." S1 filings are typically filed quickly after a SPAC deal closes, usually within 15 or 30 days, according to Chrissy Marvin, founder of SPACinsider.com, which specializes in SPAC deals. Trump Media and Technology Group didn't immediately return a request for comment. Donald Trump, who relies on Truth Social as his primary social media platform, has about 7 million followers on the app, where he frequently blasts his critics and promotes favorable polls. He also turned to Truth Social to rail about his criminal trial, which began on Monday, over accusations of falsifying business records relating to hush money payments. About 600,000 retail investors have bought shares in Trump Media and Technology Group, with about 200,000 of them buying into the stock within the last few weeks. Devin Nunes told Fox Business earlier this month, he called these small investors the most amazing part about our company. Those investors have had a wild ride since the stock began trading as DJT on 26th of March this year. The shares soared on its first 2 days of trading, but have since shed more than two-thirds of their value. Such things have promoted comparisons with so-called meme stocks like GameStop, which typically attract individual investors based on social media buzz, rather than traditional metrics favored by investors such as revenue and profit growth. Last year, Trump Media lost $58 million on revenue of $4.1 million, about half the annual sales booked by a single Chick-fil-A location. CNN Cable News Network has also covered the same story. Trump Media and Technology Group TMTG stock is tumbling again after the company announced a potentially massive new influx of shares. The struggling company is rapidly losing money and a new stock offering could help it stay afloat. But there is a downside to going back to the market with more shares. The addition of 21.5 million shares for sale announced on Monday would add more than 15% more stock to the publicly available shares of the Truth Social owner. That would substantially devalue existing shareholders' stakes, including that of former President Donald Trump, and it means that millions of shares could be sold off. This filing seeks to register all shares related to the merger that took Trump Media public, including those that are tied to warrants. Warrants give the holder the right to buy shares of a company's stock at a set price. The belief is that they're going to exchange the warrant for a share of stock and then immediately sell that stock, according to John Reckenthaler, Vice President of Research at Morningstar. Matthew Tuttle, Chief Executive of Tuttle Capital Management, said, "Management would be stupid not to sell more stock, even though the move will upset shareholders." Shares of Trump Media and Technology Group closed more than 18% lower on Monday, 15th of April. The stock had rocketed higher in recent months in anticipation of merging a blank check acquisition company with Trump's media business. But it has lost more than 60% of its value from its peak on 26th of March this year, the day after the merger was completed and it started trading publicly as Trump Media and Technology Group, TMTG. Still, the stock's move lower based on this latest update will likely be temporary, according to Matthew Tuttle. This is going to unnerve some investors. Other people might look at it and try to buy the dip, he said. As long as Trump is in the news in some way, in some shape or form, this is going to be a meme stock. People are going to trade it. Shareholders, including Donald Trump, have already seen their holdings dwindle in value since the company went public. Anyone who bought Trump Media at the closing high of $66.22 on 27th of March has now lost more than half of their money. The steep declines have put a dent in Trump's net worth. The former president's stake was valued at $5.2 billion at the closing high for Trump Media's stock price. As of Monday's close, it plummeted to about $2.1 billion. Trump's net worth fell roughly $470 million on Monday alone from the stock's plunge. This filing also seeks to register more than 146 million shares held by some stockholders for resale, including all 114.8 million of Donald Trump's 78.8 million current and 36 million potential shares that could be granted if the stock price holds above a certain level. There are a number of reasons behind the stock's eye-popping swings. The company is tied to Donald Trump, a polarizing political figure whose association with the stock has attracted scrutiny. Trump Media's public debut also marked the former president's return to Wall Street after years of regulatory and legal hurdles. Experts have warned retail investors to be careful if they choose to trade the stock, especially because the company doesn't have the fundamentals to back up its sky-high valuation. Trump Media lost $58 million in 2023 and made just $4.1 million in revenue. Donald Trump currently owns more than 57% of the company's shares. Unless he were to purchase stock in the new public offering, Trump would own just under half of the company's public traded stock after it issues more shares. But the company needs money. It has said it has substantial doubt about its ability to continue operating. The company generates little in the way of revenue. It's losing millions of dollars and it's losing many of its users as well. Although the share offering was not directly related to Donald Trump's criminal trial, which began on Monday, 15th of April, the company noted in a warning to potential investors that Trump's ongoing legal proceedings pose a risk to the company's reputation and to the company's brand. President Donald J. Trump is the subject of numerous legal proceedings. An adverse outcome in one or more of the ongoing legal proceedings could negatively impact Trump Media and Technology Group, the company noted.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today.
Raditu billahi rabba wa bil islam deena. Raditu billahi rabba wa bil islam deena.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Salamu Alaikum and welcome to this episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio.
أرجو رضاك يا الله أنت الرحيم يا الله هبني عطاك يا الله أنت الكريم منك العطاء يا الله أنت العظيم يا الله فيك الرجاء يا الله أنت الحليم
الرحمن الستار ملك الملك الغفار الوهاب المنان المتعال.
Today, Friday, is the 10th of Shawwal, 1445 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 31st of Farvardin, 1403 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 19th of April, 2024 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. Let's listen verse 173 of chapter An-Nisa, then we come back and learn more about this.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. فأما الذين آمنوا وعملوا الصالحات فيوفيهم أجورهم ويزيدهم من فضله وأما الذين استنكفوا واستكبروا فيعذبهم عذابا أليما ولا يجدون لهم من دون الله وليا ولا نصيرا.
And as for those who believed and did righteous deeds, he will give them in full their rewards and grant them extra from his bounty. But as for those who disdained and were arrogant, he will punish them with a painful punishment, and they will not find for themselves besides Allah any protector or helper.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
ما لنا رب سوى.
Faith stands first and then there comes forth good deed. Yet they are both together, deeds without faith and faith without deeds, do not cause felicity and heaven for you. If you wish to be godly, pay the complete wage to the workers who work for you and even with a little more. Without having true faith and righteous deeds, you must not expect any intercession from the prophets.
شكراً يا ربي شكراً هديت قلبي شكراً وتدربي شكراً شكراً يا ربي شكراً هديت قلبي شكراً نورت دربي شكراً شكراً يا رب يا منزل القرآن يا خالق الإنسان يا رب يا رحمن.
The topic is What After Ramadan. Throughout Ramadan, by Allah's favor, we tasted the sweetness of fasting and the night prayer. We revived our deed hearts with the recitation of the Holy Quran and dhikr of Allah. We basked in the serenity of talking to Allah and felt the peace of seeking His forgiveness in the last parts of the night. Now the Ramadan is over. Let us ask ourselves, what next? What did we gain from Ramadan? How did it change us? Did it transform our lives? Will our life post-Ramadan look exactly the same as the life pre-Ramadan? Just a short while ago, we were planning for the dream project of Ramadan. Now that Ramadan has ended, we should spend time in the month of Shawwal to evaluate our Ramadan.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. This is Ali, your host from IRB English Radio. We hope you join us, inshallah, and stay tuned till the end of this show. Today, we are going to talk about the strategies for preserving the spiritual effects of Ramadan, the holy month of Ramadan, throughout the year. To keep the effects of the blessed month of Ramadan not only until the next Ramadan but as a spiritual asset forever, one must maintain his connection with this month. Maintaining his connection is not possible without doing the same actions that were done during the holy month of Ramadan. One should not break his connection with the Holy Quran. So being in touch with the Holy Quran, reciting some verses of the Holy Quran in a daily basis, at least 50 verses of the Holy Quran in a day. It's true that most of us have recited almost one juz of the Holy Quran, 1/30th part of the Holy Quran in the holy month of Ramadan. But after Ramadan, at least 50 verses of the Holy Quran I needed to be recited in a daily basis. Those who want to keep this connection, they have to recite the Quran daily. To fast on some specific days, fasting that we refer to also, to stay awake at night and perform tahajjud, to recite and perform the Salatul Layl, and continue doing so, even if it's a little. In narrations, there is emphasis on this matter. It is narrated from Imam Ali alayhi salam that one should fast for 3 days, which is equivalent to fasting for one lifetime. See the importance. Regarding the continuity of Quran recitation, Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam quoted the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam as saying, whoever recites 10 verses of the Holy Quran in one night will not be among the negligent, and whoever recites 50 verses will be considered among the people of remembrance, and whoever recites 100 verses will be considered among the people of obedience.
IRIB English Radio presents today's special, Every Day for 15 Minutes.
Be like the sun, shining with light. Be like a rose, spreading its fragrance in every part.
Today's special.
Be like the earth, humble and wise. Be like the rain, pouring all your love to every soul.
Dear brothers and sisters, today in this part we have a tip on keeping Ramadan spirits alive, and that is getting a friend to help. What are friends for anyway? If you've got a close friend you feel you can share your new habit with, let them join you in keeping up with it and keeping tabs on you while they are at it. Till will not only encourage you, but inshallah, I'll depend your brother or sisterhood as well. Alternatively, look for groups where you can maintain the habit. If, for instance, you memorize Quran regularly in Ramadan and want to keep the habit, join an Islamic study circle focused on memorization.
My life is not the same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I wanna have you? Doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know that amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. You are the light. You guides me through my darkest nights. Shows me right from wrong in a world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone. Anything in life, but you know I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
The journey continues. Our journey to Allah does not end with Ramadan. Our journey of knowing Him, of fasting, the sweetness of worshipping Him, of living a life of ubudiyyah, that means servitude, does not end with Ramadan. There are some people who strive hard in Ramadan, but when it ends, they stop. How evil are these people? They only know the right of Allah in Ramadan. Indeed, the pious person is the one who worship and strive hard throughout the entire year. As we journey on the straight path to Allah, we should always ask Him for istiqamah, that is steadfastness and staying firm. The Prophet of Allah, Muhammad al-Mustafa, peace be upon him and his pure progeny, was asked, advise me with something that I could hold unto. He replied, say, my Lord is Allah, then remain steadfast on it.
And last but not least, how can we actually further strengthen our taqwa? Taqwa, as the Quran shows us, is not something that we get to and then we're done. You know, it's not like, for example, certain acts within the religion, you say, okay, I finished it and now I'm done. I don't have to do it again. Hajj, we know, is once in a lifetime. Hajjatul Islam, that Hajj which becomes wajib on us, it's once in a lifetime. And once you've done it, that's it. You don't have to do another Hajj again. If you can, it's obviously highly advisable, highly recommended. But those are now mustahab Hajj. It's no longer wajib on you. But many other things in Islam, there is no limit to how far you can go. You know, knowledge, there's no limit. You'll see people will go for multiple, you know, degrees at university. People will get, you know, multiple, they'll go into multiple, you know, levels of discipline of study. Islam shows taqwa. Islam shows us that taqwa is like that. It's like a ladder that you can continuously go up the ladder of taqwa. And how do we strengthen that taqwa? Whatever we've developed over this last month of Ramadan, our scholars of akhlaq give us four tips at least that we can try to work through to further maintain that taqwa and build upon it and deliver and continue to build upon it until the deliverance of the next month of Ramadan. One is that we should study to become better acquainted with our religion. You know, learning about Islam doesn't finish when you're 15 years old and you graduate from madrasa. Learning of Islam, it's a lifelong discipline. Right? You look at our maraja taqlid, our scholars who are 80, 90, 100 years old today, and they still are learning. And you'll see this when they even give fatwas, that they'll even change the rulings from one year to another because they've come across other evidence. They've done more research on a particular issue. And so when you see Grand Maraja, who are in their 80s or 90s, who continue to study and teach, and they release new rulings and give better clarity on previous rulings, we see that we're never too old to learn, never too old to study. And so one of the things that we can do to further strengthen our taqwa outside of Ramadan is to continually see study.
Thank you for listening to this episode of today's special. We leave you in Allah's protection and wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Ya Rahman, Ya Razzaq, Ya Ghaffar, Ya Qahhar, Ya Wahhab, Ya Tawwab. Ya Rahim, Ya Aziz, Ya Sami', Ya Basir, Ya Latif, Ya Khabir. حليم يا عظيم يا كبير يا حفيظ يا وكيل يا قوي يا متين.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
Deterrent
Part 2.
In the early hours of the morning of Wednesday, the 8th of January, 2020, 13 Iranian missiles destroyed the Ain al-Assad U.S. military base in Iraq. Before the attack, U.S. President Trump had warned that if Iran attacks U.S. interests, Washington will target 52 sites in the country. And people across the world have for long wondered why the U.S. did not respond to Iran's missile attack. The transfer of technology from North Korea in specific technical sectors and efforts to localize them required the endeavors of research scientists. Everyone had joined hands to register Iran as one of the few countries which had a missile industry in the shortest amount of time possible. The combination of these efforts brought about success in various fields and led to the first step towards Iran manufacturing its own missiles in 1991. Iran's first missile was the Shahab-1 with a range of 300 kilometers. 300 kilometers is the range of the missiles Iranian forces use to strike at the heart of the Ba'athist enemy during the sacred defense. The Shahab-1 and its 300-kilometer range was not the end, but only the beginning for Iranian missile engineers. In order to counter the threats of Israel as a strategic target, the missile team needed to take greater steps in its deterrence strategy. A year after the mass production of the Shahab-1, Iran took a second step in the field of medium-range missiles and Shahab-2 entered the scene. Iran's enemies were still in shock of the country's acquisition of the Shahab-1 when Tehran successfully tested the Shahab-2 missile, which had a range of 500 kilometers. This sounded the alarm bells for Iran's enemies even more. A decade after the end of the sacred defense and 3 years after Iran's second success in the field of missile engineering, a third step was taken. Threats and sanctions were used to prevent the progress of Iran's missile capabilities, but the malicious plots of Iran's enemies were thwarted when the country showcased the Shahab-3. 1998 can be called a black year for the leaders of Israeli regime. The third generation of the Shahab missile had a range of 1,150 kilometers, which made Tel Aviv a potential target for Iranian forces to destroy Israel in case of any brazen move by its regime. In parallel with the efforts devoted to liquid fuel for the Shahab missiles, another group of scientists was working on solid fuel projects. The first Iranian solid fuel production, which was a completely indigenous technology, was used during the war and called the Nazaat rocket. After the war ended, vigorous efforts continued to upgrade this indigenous technology. This is when Iranian experts produced the Zelzal rocket. From the earliest days when Iran's missile determination was shaped, Iranian experts were aware that they had to solely rely on the experience they gain and remove obstacles one by one. So every test that failed or did not reach an outcome was a step forward for them and only strengthened their resolve. It was this mindset that led Iran to become a country with missile technology much faster, whereas in advanced countries, the process had taken decades. The remaining members of the MKO who had fled to Iraq and even fought against their countrymen alongside the Ba'athist army sought to make up for their heavy losses, especially in Operation Mersad. They formed a terrorist paramilitary force which was backed by Saddam and once again prepared to strike Iran. Saddam provided the MKO with different barracks and bases in Iraq and equipped them with weapons. He wanted to use this terrorist group as a lever to exploit at an appropriate time. The arrogance of the MKO and their resolve to stage terrorist activities required a decisive response, a response that would cripple them and put an end to Saddam's illusions. Iran's missiles would take on this serious task. This operation was the first display of Iran's missile prowess after the Sacred Defense. Iran's missile strikes against the bases of the MKO in Iraq took place on June 10, 1999, exactly 2 months after the assassination of Lieutenant General Sayyed Shirazi. The operation was closely watched by arrogant powers and it delivered the message that Iran is now not only one of the missile powers in the region, but will not tolerate the arrogance of its enemies and is ready to respond with missiles to any enemy action. The 9/11 attacks not only shocked Americans, but people from all across the world. The attacks were the largest terrorist incident in U.S. history and took place at a time when, after the collapse of the Soviet Union, the structure of the bipolar world had been destroyed and replaced by a new world order, which was ruled and monopolized by the U.S. The collapse of the Twin Towers and significant damage done to the U.S. Department of Defense, known as the Pentagon, as a result of the 9/11 attacks at the beginning of the 21st century, had a certain meaning to Americans. They had to do something, not only to take revenge, but to consolidate their position in the world. But apart from these reasons, they had also found an opportunity to advance their pre-planned agendas.
Every nation in every region now has a decision to make. Either you are with us or you are with the terrorists.
Less than a month after 9/11, on October the 7th, 2001, the U.S. attacks Afghanistan with all its might. During the month of November, the U.S. captures major Afghan cities, especially Kabul, and this leads to the fall of the Taliban government. On December the 21st, an interim government takes office. The Americans were now able to leave Afghanistan, but they had come to stay. Prior to the invasion of Afghanistan, several well-equipped U.S. military bases in the Persian Gulf and Turkey monitored Iran from the south and northwest. With the military occupation of Afghanistan, the U.S. had now gained the opportunity for the U.S. Central Command, known as CENTCOM, to set up new bases in the east of Iran and tighten and complete its siege on the country even more. Less than 2 years after the invasion of Afghanistan, which was met with the silence of the international community, in 2003, the U.S. launched a war against Iraq. This time, Washington's pretext for war was the destruction of Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction. Dubbed Operation Iraqi Liberation, an international coalition once again backed the U.S. attack on a large scale. The swift occupation of Iraq was a failure when it came to providing any evidence of weapons of mass destruction. But the establishment of U.S. military bases such as Ain al-Assad in the country revealed the real reasons and the hidden agenda behind this war. By establishing these bases, Iran was now besieged by the Americans from the east, west, and south, an Iran which they claimed to be at the forefront of the axis of evil.
While an unelected few repress the Iranian people's hope for freedom, states like these and their terrorist allies constitute an axis of evil.
Iran had long ago chosen the tools it needed to counter U.S. threats. What the Americans didn't realize was that as their threats increased, so did the speed of Iran's missile advances. With the establishment of any U.S. base in neighboring countries, Iran's missile industry would also take a step forward. Based on this, 2001 to 2010 can be considered the decade of Iran's missile renaissance.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.